morning, everybody. Happy Saturday. Happy Saturday indeed. I hope you all had a great week. Hope you're pumped for the weekend. I am. I got to get my sprinkler pump working this weekend, so I'm pumped for the weekend. Yeah, let's just leave that there. You're listening to the Repcolite Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And what I want to start with today is this. I have to be one of the worst first impressions people that I know. I think I'm the worst, you know, to be honest. I'm pretty sure I'm the worst. You know, once people get to know me, if they take the time, you know, to get to know me after that initial ridiculous meeting that we have, they usually realize I'm all right. You know, I've literally had people, in fact, this should tell you everything you need to know. I've literally had people after meeting me for a third or fourth time say, you know what? You're actually fine. I always hear the surprise in their voice when they say it. They never saw it coming. Not from that first interaction. They didn't think I'd be fine at all, but they're surprised three or four meetings later to realize, you know, I'm actually okay. And whenever they do that, whenever they, you know, express that surprise to me, I can always think back to the very first interaction that I had with them. You know, I don't remember everything. My memory is pretty good. It's, you know, in certain regards. In this regard, it's flawless. I catalog and chronicle every ridiculous first meeting that I have with people because they're so horribly painful. For some reason, my mind likes to collect those like baseball cards. Anyway, whenever they express surprise that I'm actually okay, I can always think back to the first meeting that I had with them. Like the lady at church, you know, here, just to give you an example, a lady at church who came up and introduced herself to me one Sunday. She said, hey, hello, just want to introduce myself because our kids always do stuff together at church. They're always serving. Just wanted to say hello. You know, normal human interaction. In that instance, I actually talked. I did all right with that and maintained a conversation for, you know, maybe a minute and a half or so. And I was feeling pretty good about myself. But then as we were kind of wrapping things up, I smiled and I said very warmly, thank you for letting me introduce yourself to me. And my daughter, who was there for the whole thing, is still laughing about the look on that poor lady's face as she, you know, walked back to her car, just kept looking over her shoulder back at me to see if I was real or something. You know, she was completely flummoxed. She didn't know what to say to my ridiculous statement. You know, someday I'm going to meet her and it's going to be like the third or fourth interaction. And she'll probably say, you know what? You're actually fine. Another one at Grand Valley. I love this one because it was so painful physically and, you know, what, emotionally? I don't know. It's just painful. It was painful socially and physically. Anyway, I'm in a class at Grand Valley and I introduce myself to, you know, just a whole group of people. You know, we're just starting the semester and I stand up and for some reason I'm going to shake hands. You know, I'm just talking to people. I'm doing everything right is what I'm thinking. You know, I'm not shrinking from physical contact. I'm shaking hands. I'm making eye contact. I'm announcing, you know, who I am and all the things you're supposed to do when you meet people. And I'm doing that. And I'm feeling pretty good about myself, except for the fact that I leaned on the desk, you know, the desktop to reach out and shake somebody's hand. And this desk was designed by somebody, some sadistic person who only put legs under the chair. You know, that was the support system for this desk that we would sit at. The chair had four legs under it and the little tabletop, none. So when I leaned on that, you can only imagine what happened. I went tipping forward. The desk went flying across the room, knocking over other desks. It was chaos, you know, for about 10 minutes or so as people were laughing. You know, as the lecture starts, people are still laughing and I'm sure they're laughing about me. Later on, I'm doing a group project with one of those people, and I get that same old standard response. You know, the guy says, hey, you know what? You're actually all right. You're actually fine. You know, I'm actually fine. Am I, though? Am I really fine? You know, I wish those were my only two instances of that, but I've lived an entire lifetime of them. You know, I mean, maybe not when I was a baby. You know, maybe I could do all right then, but at least 50 of my 52 years have been painful first impressions. And if you don't believe me, come to some Repcolite event sometime and find me. I'm usually there. Start a conversation and just wait for it. Bring your popcorn. 9 times out of 10, I'm going to do or say something absolutely ridiculous. And then watch my face because it'll register how ridiculous I've been. And then it just gets worse. All right. So do that. All right. First impressions. They're not and never have been my strong suit. And that brings me to the paint point. And of course, there's no way I'm going to try to give you advice on, you know, making a good first impression in a social setting. That's a mystery to me. That's a treasure chest I will never be able to unlock. You know, I'm never going to get there. But I can talk about first impressions on another level, on the home level. And when it comes to our homes, the first impression, pretty much every guest, visitor, traveling salesperson, you name it, every passerby, the first impression they have of our home, it's usually our front door. You know, people take in and check out all different aspects of our home's exterior. I get that. But the primary focal point is always that front door. Even if people don't use that door as the main entrance, it's still the part of the house that first draws your eye. And we know that's true because when we walk past houses, that is what we notice. I don't know if it's just because normally they have, you know, a bright pop of color there compared to the rest of the home. I don't know what it is about it. Maybe some psychological thing about the door and the entrance to the home. But that's where our eyes are drawn as we walk past houses, unless it's dark, unless it's evening and dark and the windows are open. Then everybody looks inside the house, right? We try to act like we're not doing that, but we're all scoping out their decor or trying to figure out what's on TV or something like that. But if it's normal, you know, if it's daytime, you're generally checking out that front door, you know, and that front door is so important. It sets the tone for the entire exterior of the home. A new paint job in a perfect color on that front door can dramatically boost the curb appeal. And honestly, it can even make your home look better maintained and more valuable, all for the cost of a quart of paint and a little bit of time. So painting your front door, it's easily one of the fastest and most affordable ways to freshen up your home's exterior. And that's really important, you know, right now in an economy where everybody's, you know, a little bit up in the air, not sure where things are going. Maybe you've got remodels that you'd like to do, but they're kind of on pause right now. This is a project you can jump into, you can feel good about, and it's going to have a huge impact for very little money. All right, let's get to the project. And to begin with, you need to start by picking the right day to do it. And there are a number of things to think about when I say look for the right day. First off, you want to look for a day when the temperatures are somewhere between 50 and 85 degrees. And yeah, I know that's a crazy big range, but I'm giving it because there are always people out there who want to know, how hot can it be when I put the paint on? You know, how hot before it's too hot? If you're one of those people, the 85 is too hot if you're using latex paint. But with that said, it's going to be ideal if you can work in temperatures a little bit below that. All right. So work in the right temperature range. That's first. Second, choose a day when it's not too windy. Right. Too much wind can cause the paint to dry too quickly. Third, you've got to choose a day when the humidity is in the 40 to 70% range. That's ideal. That's what you're looking for. Fourth, choose a day when rain isn't predicted for the next 24 hours. And fifth, oh my goodness, who believed there were 5 points I was going to make about choosing the right day? Fifth, and this one's not really a weather condition, and it's not so much about picking the right day. It's about working in the right time frame. What I'm getting at is don't work in the direct sunlight. The heat, just like the wind, can cause your paint to dry too quickly. And similarly, don't start painting a surface that's recently been exposed to direct sunlight. Or at least check that surface temperature before you start. A door that's in the shade now, but that's been exposed to the sun for hours, can often be way too hot, and it's going to cause the paint to dry quickly. All right? So pay attention to weather conditions, the predictions that are coming, and the surface temperature of the material that you're painting. Keep all of that stuff in mind. Pick the right day and the right time to do your work. All right. Next, you've got to gather your supplies. All right. And I've got all of this online at repcolite.com/front doors if you want to go and check it out. If that's just easier than listening to me, or if you want to, you know, double check, you're not taking your notes. Maybe you didn't have your little Repcolite Home Improvement Show notepad out ready to go, or your pen was dry. It's frustrating. You licked the end of it, still didn't work. You well, you couldn't find another pen. I don't know what I'm even talking about. First impressions. You know, this isn't your first impression of me, but that's the kind of thing I do in a first impression. I ramble. And when I realize I'm off trail, I ramble even further and faster, thinking that that's somehow going to help me. Anyway, if you don't have notes, you're not taking notes, and you need notes, head to repcolite.com/frontdoors, and you'll find everything there. All right, so gather your supplies. You're going to need a good cleaner like TSP, trisodium phosphate, crud cutter will work, Dawn dish soap will work. Get a good cleaner. Get some 220 grit sandpaper. You probably want to grab some painter's tape, maybe frog tape, whatever you like to work with. Get a good masking tape, though. And then a high-quality angled brush, you know, angled sash brush, and a micro-plush roller cover, all right? So get all of those things. And, of course, you'll need a tray and all the things that you need to make the roller cover work. A little frame. You can't use the roller cover without a frame. You know, you can't pinch it between your fingers and make it work. Need the frame. So get all of that stuff. Now, when it comes to the paint, I would recommend Benjamin Moore's Aura Exterior in a soft gloss. That would work really well. Benjamin Moore's Regal Select Exterior. That would also work really well. Both of those are going to offer incredible durability, rich color. It's going to retain the color. It's not going to fade very quickly. And it's going to really make the door look great. So those would work. Repcolite's Endura is another option that will hold up just like those Benjamin Moore products. So three different options there. Again, that's all at repcolite.com/frontdoors. All of those recommendations are there. You can check them out. All right. So you've got all of that stuff together, right? Now it's time to actually start prepping the door and doing the work. And I think probably what is the prudent thing to do is to take a break right now, play some commercials, and then actually get to the project itself, the work of the project on the other side. So stick around. Hang with me. We'll be back in just a minute. And we're back. You're listening to the Repcolite Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And we're kind of in the middle of a front door repaint project. I'm basically trying to walk you through all the things that you need to know to pull this project off flawlessly, perfectly, beautifully. And really, I should have said this much earlier in the show, but just because you're maybe not interested in painting your front door doesn't mean that all of this info is worthless. You know, don't tune it out. Most of this stuff applies to pretty much any painting project. So it's incredibly valuable for everybody out there listening. This is gold. So stay tuned in. Hang on my every word like it's honey from the comb. All right. In the last segment, I talked about gathering your supplies and I made some paint recommendations. If you missed any of that and you'd like a full guide for painting your front door, just head to repcolite.com/frontdoors. You can get one for free right there. All right. Once you've got your supplies and your paint, it's time to prep the door. You're going to start by removing the hardware if you can. If you can't do that, that's fine. Just tape around it and cover it over really well that way. Once you've got that done, wash the door thoroughly with TSP or whatever cleaner you picked. And you're doing this to remove any dirt, grease, residue, things like that. Even a brand new pre-primed door needs a good cleaning. So make sure you do that washing and then rinse it well with clean water. After that's dry, lightly scuff sand the surface with your 220 grit sandpaper and then feather out any areas where old paint may have peeled so that you can smooth that transition out. And make sure that any paint that's left on the door is not even close to peeling. All the paint that stays on the door, if it's been painted before, needs to be stuck down really well. So if you've got peeling areas, really work them over a little bit to make sure that you've got all the peeling paint off. Once you've done all of that and you've done that sanding, wipe the whole door down with a damp cloth to remove your dust. Now, if you've got bare metal or bare wood in any spots at that point, you do need to spot prime those areas. Metal doors especially are going to need a rust inhibitive primer, so be sure to prime those bare spots if you've got them. Now, once you've done that, you're ready to paint, and I'm going to walk you through the order of how you would paint the door. If you've got inset panels or something like that. And I know this is going to probably be confusing on the radio. So again, head to repcolite.com/frontdoors and you can see what I'm talking about. But anyway, if you've got inset panels, that's where you want to start. And you're going to brush carefully into the corners and the edges. Then you're going to use a Microplush roller cover to roll the panels themselves. And something that works beautifully for projects like this are the Wooster Jumbo Coaters. I talk about them all the time on the show. They're 4-inch mini rollers. And what sets them apart from other mini roller systems is that the little Jumbo Coater covers match the larger Wooster covers exactly. You know, the same nap, the same materials, all of that. So basically, that means you can roll part of the door with a larger cover if you want to, and then the smaller sections with a Jumbo Coater, and the way the cover leaves off the paint will be identical no matter which cover you use. That's really important and really cool. So check out those Jumbo Coaters. They're definitely worth picking up. All right, so you roll the panels on the door if you've got them. Once you've done that, you roll the mullions. Now, those are the vertical sections between the panels. After that, it's time to paint the rails, which are the horizontal pieces on the door. And once you've done that, you roll the outside edges. All of that is going to just be the best order in which to paint that door. And again, I've got all of that at repcolite.com/front doors. Everybody can say it from memory right now. repcolite.com/front doors. Check that out. All right. As you're doing your painting, plan your timing carefully. You know, you pick the right day, plan your timing carefully. Ideally, you're going to be putting your first coat on around 8 or 9 in the morning, something like that. You want the dew to be, you know, off the door, or, you know, the door to be dry before you start. But if the sooner you can start, the better. Let it dry for about 4 hours after you've painted it, and then apply the second coat probably around noon, 1 o'clock or so. And then after that final coat, try to keep the door open as long as possible, hopefully till about 7 p.m., and that's going to give the paint time to set up properly and prevent it from sticking when you close it. All right, last thing I got for you are just a handful of tips, pro tips to get the best results possible. First thing, do not skimp on the roller cover, the applicator, or the brush. You know, whatever you're using to apply it, you know, you'll probably need both of those. Don't cheap out on those things. We talk about it on the show all the time. And I talk about it because I've seen it happen so many times. People will try to save a little bit of money, which is completely understandable. I'm in that boat most of the time, but I speak from experience. Normally, I try to skimp out and save money on things that I shouldn't be saving money on. And I always, always regret that decision. In this instance, this is absolutely one of those that you'll regret. Don't skimp out on the roller cover. Don't skimp out on the brush. Get good tools for this, especially the roller cover. You know, a cheap roller cover can be $2 to $3, maybe. An expensive roller cover, top-of-the-line roller cover, is going to be $5, you know, $5.50. You don't want to save $2.50 and have the tool that's putting your high-quality paint on. You don't want that tool to produce results that don't look good. So use a good roller cover. I'd recommend the Wooster Microplush roller covers. Love those. You're going to get an almost sprayed-like finish on the door if you use that. And the other great thing about those Wooster Microplush covers is that they come in the Wooster Jumbo Coater size, which is the 4-inch or the 6-inch mini rollers. And they also come all the way up in a 9-inch, a 14-inch, an 18-inch cover. Whatever size cover you'd want to use on the door, even if you have to mix sizes, you'll have the exact same cover, the exact same roller nap and finish. So you're not going to have any differences when you switch your roller cover. So Wooster Microplush roller covers, that's the way to go. Another thing, make sure you're choosing the right paint for the project. Again, I recommended Benjamin Moore's Aura Exterior, Benjamin Moore's Regal Select Exterior, and Repcolite's Endura. All of those are going to hold up really well. They'll be tough on the door. They'll hold up to whatever you throw at it. And also, they're going to resist fading better than a lot of other products out there. So keep those things in mind. Last little tip, if you've got any questions at all, if you're getting ready to start this project, just swing out to any Repcolite store. Tell us what you're working on, and we'll walk you through all the ins and outs, because I can't cover every situation that you might run into on that door. I can't do that on the radio, but they can certainly help you with your exact situation in the store at any Repcolite. So stop out and see us. And that's pretty much it. With a little bit of prep work and some good products, you can completely transform the look of your home for a minimal investment. You know, a quart of paint and some supplies. It's only going to take you a couple hours, and you're going to have a big payoff at the end. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I'll be in the studio with Barbara Klein, a decorative painter who's got a lot of great stories. We're going to get to that in just a minute. Stick around. Hey And we're back. You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And right now, I want to play a portion of a conversation that I had earlier this week with Barbara Klein, owner of Creative Impressions. Now, Barbara's a decorative artist, and she's been doing all sorts of faux finishes on walls since the late 1990s. Now, what I'm going to air is just a small portion of the full conversation. You can find the entire interview on Repco Light's YouTube series, The Interviews. So by all means, check that out. But for right now, here's Barbara. So let's go way back. Before faux finishes, before doing decorative walls, doing all of those things, you were in respiratory therapy.
Correct.
What in the world was that jump like to go from medicine to painting? Tell me about that.
Well, it was, I've always had a creative background. It's always something I've dabbled with. And respiratory was something that was a two-year school for me. It was easy. It was to make good money. But it just wasn't filling my soul, if you will. And it just, the medical field just got too complicated. And
how long were you doing this respiratory therapy stuff?
I was doing it for over 20 years.
Oh, so good long time.
And teaching CPR as well. And just in 1998, I took a couple little decorative painting classes in a store in a city near me and got the bug, started doing it for myself, started doing it for family and friends. And they said, you know, you're really good at this. You should consider this being a business. And having young children, it was something that I could work my schedule around.
Sure.
Them and daycare. And I actually did both jobs for a while.
The respiratory therapy and the faux
and
finish.
Trying to do the faux finishing. Yeah. And then in 99, I joined an organization called, at the time it was called Sally. And then it changed to IDEL, which is, Sally was Stencils Artisans League.
Okay.
Because back in the 80s, stenciling was very big.
And it was the thing in the 80s.
Yeah. And then people started incorporating faux finishes with their stenciling. So the organization regrouped in the mid-2000s and said, you know, we need to be more inclusive. And so IDEL is actually International Decorative Artisans League. Through that, I have learned from the best in the industry. And I don't take any job I do, you know, I take it very seriously. So I want training. I want to know what I'm giving my clients.
So when you started this, what was the big faux finishing thing going on? I mean, way back. I mean, were we sponge painting, rag painting? I mean, is that what we were doing at that point?
Yeah. But I learned through the years that, yeah, you might use a sponge, but you might use a rag. But a true faux finish professional isn't going to allow you to see what tool is used.
Okay.
And so,
when I did it, you could tell what tools were used.
Right.
You could even tell how I held it.
Right. Exactly. And that's being, having too much paint on your tool.
Yeah.
And just going at it. So the whole idea too is a light touch, going easy on putting the product on the tool. Even with stenciling, you dip the tip of the brush because it's a flat brush.
Mm-hmm.
You dip the tip of the brush in the paint and you off roll it on a piece of paper towel. So what that does is it works that paint up into the bristles. So as you're tapping or swirling your brush into the stencil, the paint is gradually coming off. It's not this big
blob,
and it prevents the paint from bleeding underneath the stencil. Also, you spray the stencil with adhesive spray so you have a good stick.
Right. I know that. I've done that one before.
Yeah. But faux finishing has really evolved over the years, and you might use a sponge and a granite technique just because you're blending multiple colors to build the look of stone or build the look of brick. If you look at an actual piece of stone or brick, there's a light, medium, and dark tone. Mm-hmm. So I've actually mimicked like your wall behind you. I've actually replicated a wall like that to look like actual brick.
You said that you just weren't feeling it in the respiratory, you know, in the medicine. And you said medicine got more complicated, or I don't know if that was the word you used.
For me, it became less about patient care and more about making money. The hospitals started changing. Instead of nonprofit, they became more money makers. And then the insurance companies changed in the, I guess, the mid-80s to what they call a DRG. And the DRG is, they were dictating how long a patient could stay in a hospital, depending on what they were there for.
Okay.
We all heal differently. And sometimes there's complications that mm-hmm. prevent us from leaving when the insurance companies want us to leave. And so with hospital workers, we were beginning to be overworked, not compensated for it. And it was, for me, the reason I got into it was for patient care.
Right. And now you feel like you're kind of short shifting that a little
bit. Yeah, we were just robots trying to, you know, get as many treatments done in a day. Not really being able to spend the time with our patients like we should. I also specialized in pediatrics. I worked with cystic fibrosis and asthmatic, and I did home teaching for mm-hmm. the parents for these children and tried to teach them how to not only care for their child, but to care for their home. With asthmatics, you have to set up your home differently.
Sure.
Due to dust and carpets and smoking. And so I was teaching as well as, you know, doing the therapy. So with respiratory therapy, you're working with the heart and lungs. So you're really a heart and lung specialist. It's very part of me. I'm still very passionate about my knowledge that I know from the years of mm-hmm. working in respiratory, but it just didn't fulfill me anymore. And so, and having a young family as well, it was very difficult.
So what made this switch? I mean, what made you go into, you know, from that to faux finishing, you know, or creative?
I love paint, color. It brought me joy and it became a passion of mine. I just really loved transforming people's homes.
You started with your own, you said, and then you had friends say, hey, you got something. Did you have artistic ability, like, before this? Was this something that you already knew you had?
Well, I believe we all have a creative side. It's just whether you embrace it or not. It comes from your right side of your brain. Mm-hmm. So I believe that color really dictates a mood to a room. There are some clients that I have worked with that are very specific about how a color allows them to go into a room. I had one client that I changed, even though she had it painted and mm-hmm. she had a designer in there redesigning her TV room. She couldn't go in there because the color was, it was in the blue family and there was just too much blue in that room. And she goes, I can't go in there.
Go in there. She hated it that badly.
So what I did, instead of really changing the whole process there, mm-hmm. she had a lot of off-white in there. So what I did was I took a paint, I added a glaze, and I did an off-white strie over her blue. And the strie is done with a wallpaper brush.
Okay.
So you're putting the paint on and you're strieing through it to leave that linear design through there. Mm-hmm. And so her blue still poked through, but it wasn't dominant.
It muted.
And it really coordinated all the fabrics and stuff that she had in her room. And it was more inviting for her then.
Have you ever done ceilings?
Oh yeah.
What are some of the most common things you end up doing on a ceiling?
Some ceilings have been with metallic textures, troweled on, and some have been Venetian plaster. Sometimes it's stenciled. I have stenciled medallions around light fixtures. I do also with stenciling, I also do embossing. So the texture medium is troweled over a stencil. So when you remove the stencil, now you have a 3D image of that design.
Sure.
Ceiling work is tough.
Yeah, it's talk tough about that. What's neck. The system look like? I mean, are you on a scaffolding? I just watched The Agony and the Ecstasy. Have you seen that? It's an old movie with Charlton Heston.
Oh,
and Charlton Heston is playing Michelangelo, and he's painting the Sistine Chapel, and he creates these huge scaffolds, and he's laying up out there painting it. How do you do it?
Well, so I worked on, in the mid-2000s, I worked with another artist on an 18,000 square foot home up in Holly, Michigan. And we were on scaffolding there, not on our backs. I actually was in charge. The girl whose job it was did not like stenciling. She knew that I was good at it. And so she hired me on to do, in this 18,000 square foot home, all of the stenciling was done by me and possibly an assistant. Mm-hmm. On the main floor, I did 1,500 square feet of ceiling with a Moroccan design stencil. It took me a month and a half with an assistant.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
It was the main living space was very huge, but I had to, fortunately, one of the contractors on the job site, because there was about 60 people working at this home on a daily basis, they taught me how to use a string line to keep my stencil pattern straight, because you have to go linear down a line, and there's registration marks that help you keep it a line, but then you have to move the stencil over to do the next row. And so to keep my rows straight, the string line was like, you know, an answer to my prayer. We were on scaffolding the whole time. We used the little neck braces, so we have something to lay our head on.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. How long straight would you do that before you'd take a break for the day?
Like, well, were you
working 8-hour days?
Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah. Yeah. It was a lot.
How'd you drive home? Head up in the air.
Well, fortunately, the girl we worked for gave us a massage, that me and my assistant gave me a massage after that month and a half of just doing just that. So it was a faux finisher's dream and a faux finisher's nightmare.
Nightmare all at once. How long ago was that?
Back in the 2000s.
All right.
Yeah. All right. I mean, it was like a museum. We did barrel ceilings in this home. We did tray ceilings. We did all kinds of different barrels. I mean, my dad was a carpenter, and the amount of craftsmanship that went into this home blew my mind. Not only just us, because we're the last to come in, right? Yep. So the carpenters have already done their work. The painters kind of were doing their work and then coming in after us to finish their work. The electricians were after us. So I would have to say the job for the main contractor, it was very choreographed well, as to who was going in when, but I would say a majority of that job was all working from scaffolding.
All right, let's pause the conversation right here. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll be back in a few minutes with the conclusion. Stick around. And we're back. You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore, and I'm continuing my conversation with Barbara Klein from Creative Impressions. And if you missed the first part, don't worry, you can catch that full interview in all of its glory on our YouTube series, The Interviews. So head to Repco Light's YouTube page, check out The Interviews. There's a whole bunch of good stuff there. Definitely check it out. All right, let's get back to the conversation with Barbara Klein. Now, you also do furniture, right?
I do.
Is that something you're starting to do more of?
Well, you know, as a faux finisher, I'm 64 now, so the body isn't as flexible as the olden days.
When you're just cranking out ceilings left and right, right?
So, yeah, the flexibility in my body. And actually, in my organization, when I go to conventions, I talk a lot to the other faux finishers who are in my age range. And they're looking for something to do when they can get off the ladder, but still create and do what they love to do. And so I love transforming furniture. A lot of millennials don't like antiques. Mm-hmm. And so it's a way to update and give it new life. You can give it new legs. You can give it new hardware. I can add a stencil design to it. I can add an embossed design, and it looks like kind of carved wood. Well, and I work with foils, and foils came from the furniture company originally. And there's a pattern to foils, or there's
explain
hologram.
More about foils just for people who have no idea.
Foils are done where there's a decorative foil attached to a cellophane. The cellophane is actually on top. So if you're going to use a foil, you have to put an adhesive down, let it dry. So there's tack. And then the foil goes on and you scrub it with a brush. Mm-hmm. So when it releases, what you pull off is just clear cellophane. So the foil is now left on the furniture piece. I can even foil through a stencil so that it's a stencil design, but then it has that foil in the background. So I'm not really using paint. I'm using the foil as the decorative part. And there's cowhide, there's animal print, there's hologram, there's all kinds. There's a stencil, or there's a foil company in California. She's got florals, and she's got all kinds of categories. And it again, it elevates a piece of furniture.
Yeah, definitely a way to elevate furniture in a big way. Now, in the last little bit that we've got, I know your dad was a carpenter, and I know that he taught you a fair amount about, you know, carpentry and all of that. I'm curious how that went down. You know, did you follow him around as a little kid?
I followed him around, you know, as long as he allowed us to. Sometimes it was, you know, he didn't want the kids in the room, but sometimes we were the laborers for him, you know, going and picking up his scraps. And actually the house, God rest his soul, he died in March of 2020 from COVID, but okay. He had other health complications. The house that we lived in for 45 years, actually, he built. My mom designed it, and my dad built it along with many of his friends who were tradespeople. So he was a beautiful carpenter. He didn't really grow up with a lot of self-esteem, so mm-hmm. He didn't realize that he was as talented as he was. He built furniture. He built, I have the first grandson.
Oh.
And he built a cradle for him, which is in our basement right now. it went through all the grandchildren. My sister has two kids, and now we're on the next generation. So...
That is so cool. I mean, just the legacy of that, you know, like you said, it's still there.
Yeah.
You know, you put this work in and it stays.
And he built actually the bunk beds for our boys. And my oldest granddaughter has one of those now. So my oldest son is very sentimental about his papa.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to give anything away that belongs to him. So
you learned a fair amount from that. I mean, what do you build as well? Do you do a little carpentry stuff?
I don't build, but I have an understanding. I mean, I can change a light fixture. I've gotten my husband to do a lot of things. My husband's in car sales, so for him to do things around the house isn't always easy. But I just have the knowledge of how a house is built, how it should look. So when I hire contractors for my own stuff to be fixed, I probably am a big thorn in their side.
I was just thinking, you know what you want and you know what's possible and what should be.
I know what it should look like. Yeah. And I have such an eagle eye of precision that
I bet they love working for you.
Well, you know, I just have expectations.
You have a website that we can check out? Or how do you have your stuff out there?
I am on LinkedIn. I am on Facebook, and I am on Instagram.
All right. I'll put links to all of that in the description of the video on the radio show in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Barbara, thanks so much for hanging out with me today.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
And that's going to do it. Remember, you can catch the full interview with Barbara by heading to Repco Lights YouTube page and then checking out our new feature called The Interviews. All right, last thing I want to leave you with this week is in regards to the first half of the show. Now, I talked about painting front doors, and I also doled out some brilliant, absolutely brilliant color advice. Now, if you're thinking about tackling a front door project, do yourself a favor. I talk about it all the time on the show. Our guests talk about it when they come on. Do yourself a favor and get the best paint that you can. You don't want to put in the work and then have to redo it sooner than you'd like to do it. So stop out at any Repco Light location. We'll help you get everything you need. All right, whatever you do today, make sure paint's a part of it. And remember, your next project is way easier than you think it's going to be. Stop out at any Repco Light and let us help. Have a great weekend, everybody, and I'll see you next week. I'm Dan Hansen. Thanks for listening.